Six pack Lapidat. And this is a special one. We are discussing the goats in the next two podcasts, small little series on goats. And I brought some goats with me, haven't I? We got Matt Gary, Eric Helms, Rory the Linchpin, Red Light Rory, whatever. Goes by so many aliases at this point. And we got some talking to do. And Matt, before we get started, we had all hopped on here before we started recording, and you said to me, this was your idea for anyone listening. You got a wealth of knowledge, and you said the amount of prep you've done, you've prepped more for this than any episode you've ever done, and you've done a lot of prep work for a lot of episodes going back probably the very first year I started recording King of List, 2016. And you said you felt a little bit of nervousness or a little bit of what is it? What's so special about this?
Yeah, man, my heart is racing, and that's not hyperbole. I mean that. It's not, we talk about getting excited to compete and excited to coach. And it's not nervousness. It's just excitement. I think you and I began this conversation last May or June of 2023, and so I just want to thank you immensely for like allowing this to happen and assembling this panel, because I think with the four of us, we've got a lot of wisdom and knowledge and a lot of things to say. And I know that you kind of fell in love with the idea, and we really thought that it would fit in nicely to the calendar kind of around year's end, because there's this natural lull in competitive powerlifting, and it's kind of a nice way to tie a ribbon around the year. Or, as we're doing it now in January, it's kind of a nice way to introduce and kick off 2024 and get people thinking at the start of the year. So for those reasons, I'm just thrilled and just thrilled to talk about
Well,
this. So
first off, thank you and thank you, gentlemen. I mean, you guys are the backbone and the foundation for which I could stand on these. So believe me, the feeling goes both ways. I appreciate you guys. So, we wanted to talk about, and this is a discussion as well,
yep.
what is a goat? Matt, you got some ideas on this. You've been
Yeah.
around longer than any of us.
Yep. So I think there's two primary reasons that I approached you, Ryan, and that I wanted to do this podcast. And so the first one is because it is exhausting and loathsome to hear people with very little knowledge about this sport and who are just, wet behind the ears in this community to use recency bias, not only to formulate most of their powerlifting opinions, but really worse yet, to prematurely anoint lifters with this GOAT term or GOAT status. So let's just start with a definition. I mean, we all know that GOAT is an acronym or abbreviation for the greatest of all time. And I think that most of us can agree, I'm certain sure this panel and even the listeners, when we use the term greatest, we generically mean the term best, like who's the best power lifter of all time. And I don't think anybody on a surface level would argue with that. It's almost like we could take the term GOAT and substitute it with boat or best of all time. But let's start. I know this may seem a little bit ridiculous, but I want to start with a little bit of an English lesson. It's important to recognize that greatest or is an adjective, and adjectives aren't singular, nor are they plural in nature. And so we precede the word greatest with what we call a definite article or the word the. Okay, we don't use an indefinite article like the word a, and you can't add an s to greatest. Greatests is actually not a word. You can't even find it in a dictionary. So naturally, it's really frustrating. Like when I've listened to this podcast and other podcasts, and of course, we're all scrolling on social media and Instagram to hear people say, oh, he's a goat, she's a goat, and so on. And in fact, they've gone so far as to say that they've anointed several goats within a single episode. And I think what many guests or people mean to say is this lifter is one of the all-time greats. That would be the appropriate thing to say. I think that's what they mean. So I'm not trying to throw everybody under the bus, but it's just to say that we need to be careful and selective with our language. So, I'd be fine with people saying that, but there can't even be multiple goats within a single weight category. That's absurd. The second reason that we're doing this podcast is because it's fun and it makes for great sports talk and debate. And we're doing this, and Rory's laughing, and we're going to go back and forth. And I'm sure that we're going to agree on some things and completely disagree on others. And that's what's going to make this hopefully very riveting for us and for the listeners. So, sports talk and debate are usually entirely subjective, and they're based more on opinion and emotion and feeling. and preferences rather than concrete data, you know, and sure, you know, people are going to use things like wins and losses and championships and records to bolster their argument, but ultimately their final decision is usually going to be based on bias or preference. And not that that's inherently wrong to base our choices on opinions. It's just that opinions are like assholes. Okay. And everybody's got one, and they aren't always based in reality. And so when we talk about lovers of sports, you know, oftentimes we use the term fan. And fan, as you know, is short for the term fanatic. And I want to define the term fanatic, okay? It's a person filled with excessive and single-minded zeal. And I think we all know that when we talk about fanatics, usually we're talking about people who are extreme political or religious fanatics. And I think if I asked this panel, if I asked you three guys, would we consider most religious and political fanatics out there to be rational thinkers or rational people? And Rory here is smirking. You know, the answer is probably no, universally no. So I want to provide an example, a recent example of where this kind of went crazy. SPD released, you know, the wild cards for Sheffield. And of course, as we know, Gavin Aiden made it as one of the wild cards. And Gavin posted on his Instagram, you know, the post, or he shared and collaborated on the post with SPD. And one of the comments came in and basically said, that's why he's the GOAT. Gavin Aiden, the GOAT. And I looked up this person. Of course, I clicked on this. I thought that the comment was absurd. Okay. First of all, let me preface by saying I love Gavin. I have consulted with Gavin. I've hung out with Gavin. He's a great guy. I think we can all attest to that. But I looked this person up who made that comment, and the kid who made it is 21. And I don't know if he's a friend of Gavin's or what have you, or just a, you know, like I said, a fan of Gavin's. But I think if we asked Gavin, Gavin wouldn't even consider himself the GOAT. I mean, respectfully, and I say this respectfully, what has Gavin done that would give him that status, right? He's won a junior world championships. He doesn't currently hold any world records, and I don't even believe he's won a national championship yet. So with all due respect, Gavin is really not in that conversation. I asked you guys in the group chat earlier this week, I asked you how old you were, because I wanted to verify that, and I wanted to know how long you've been in the sport. And once again, Rory's kind of laughing because he's like, I wonder what Matt's thinking. And so here were the answers. Rory is 29. He's got 10 years in the sport. Eric is 40. He's got 19 years in the sport. Ryan is 44, but identifies as 29.
That's right.
And he's got 16. Right. He's got 16 years in the sport. I'm 51 and have 29 years in the sport. So if we look at that, I have just as many years in powerlifting as Rory has been alive. And that doesn't mean that I'm omniscient. It doesn't mean that I know more. It just means that I have more experience than most. Okay, and there's also a lot of amazing people in this sport that are vastly more experienced, like myself, like Dave Ricks and my wife, Susie, and Brad Gillingham, and a lot of people who have been around, and they are troves of knowledge that we would all be very wise to talk to. I've been really blessed. I've been to 22 IPF World Championships, 16 of which have been overseas. I've been to every single Arnold since 2008. I've been to one World Games, more local competitions than I can count. And I've also been the game day coach, or significantly assisted in the coaching of 18 of these classic world champions, some of which we're going to talk about. So if you do the math and run the numbers on how many world champions there have been in classic competition, because I think we're talking about since from 2012, the World Cup till current, right? I have approximately firsthand and intimate knowledge, or played a role in 11% of those champions. So what does all that mean? That is all to say that not all opinions are created equal. Some actually mean more than others. That's why when I hear or see statements like this, where, you know, Gavin was the GOAT, I just kind of roll my eyes, have a good laugh, and keep on trucking. It's not that this person is not allowed to have an opinion. It's that their opinion doesn't matter that much in the grand scheme of things. So before we really dive in and get into this and we start talking about our picks, let's define greatness, because I think it's going to mean different things to different people. So when you look up the term great in a dictionary, it says of an extent, amount, or intensity considerably above the normal or average. So you've got synonyms like exceptional, extraordinary, special, expert, outstanding, pronounced, you name it. I think we can all chime in and throw out some different adjectives that might be our preferences. But I think that if I were going to give this a succinct, concise definition and knock the word greatness down into two words, I would say, and especially in the sports realm, it is sustained excellence. That, in my eyes, is the definition of greatness. It is so much more than a one-off. It's more than doing it one time. We've seen a lot of people have these singular, extraordinary performances. But the problem with sports debate is that we're often debating two different things, and people are going to change their definitions to suit their arguments. And that's where the recency bias comes in so greatly, is that people see this extraordinary performance and they realize that this is the first time that this has been done. But there's other people who have a legacy of similar performances. And yeah, this one performance may have trumped those other performances, but it's just one. And so that's why I said it is sustained greatness. So when we talk about, you know, GOATs in sports, usually, you know, teams, sports teams are primarily judged on championships. But when we talk about individual players, they're primarily judged on stats. And I think powerlifters personally, and in just a few minutes, I'm going to open it up to you guys. I think powerlifters and most individual sport athletes, especially in the GOAT conversation, should be judged on both, you know, which brings me back to the subjective nature of this discussion. So one of a really good example I can give is in American football, right? There are 11 players on the field at any one time. And essentially there are really three different positions on offense. You've got a quarterback, you've got running back and wide receivers who do the same, essentially the same thing. They can carry the ball or catch the ball. And then you've got offensive linemen. And on defense, you've got defensive linemen and linebackers, and then you've got DBs. And you can throw in specialists like long snappers and punters and holders and kickers. But all that adds up to about 9 different positions. So it is really fruitless to debate who's the greatest football player of all time, because there's so many different positions with different skill sets and so forth. So more appropriately, you know, football debate is like, let's debate the GOAT at individual positions. And so when we talk about an American football, and I'm not going to bore your foreign listeners, but in American football, when it's discussed who is the greatest running back of all time, there's usually about 3 or 4 names that come into consideration, right? Emmitt Smith, who had the most yards. You've got Walter Payton, Barry Sanders, and probably for the older generation, Jim Brown. But what about the guy who had the most yards ever in the sport's biggest game? And this is what I mean about recency bias. So the biggest game in sports is the Super Bowl. Can anybody name the person or the running back who had the most yards in Super Bowl history?
Barry Sanders is my guess.
No, so Barry Sanders never made it to a Super Bowl, number one. So
there you go. This you can tell, right? I'm a powerlifting fan.
Yeah, so the point is, the guy's name is Timmy Smith. And nobody knows who the hell Timmy Smith is, but he ran for 204 yards and 2 touchdowns when the Redskins beat the Broncos in Super Bowl 22. But guess what? Timmy Smith played for 3 years, and he finished his career with 602 yards and 3 TDs. There's literally no one on this planet that would anoint that guy the GOAT of running backs, yet he had more yards in the Super Bowl, which is the sport's zenith of competition, than any other running back in NFL history. So that's what I mean when recency bias in powerlifting needs to come to this screeching halt. These newer lifters to the sport who don't know anything about the history and only what happened 5 minutes ago, let alone what happened at last year's Worlds. That's why we cannot anoint a lifter GOAT status when they've had this single outlier performance. When we talk about basketball, that's a team sport, but it's a little bit easier to debate GOATs in basketball because when there's 5 players on the court, every single player, while they're playing a different position, point guard, shooting guard, forward, center, et cetera, every player on the basketball court is still allowed to do the same things. They can all dribble, pass, shoot, rebound, block, steal. So when we talk about basketball, most of the time it comes down to like 3 people, usually Jordan, LeBron, and Kobe. Right. And for the older generation, they might throw in like a Bill Russell or a Wilt Chamberlain or something like that. But those are the 3 names that kind of get tossed around with basketball. I want to use just another 2 more examples, Ryan, if I will. Let's use sprinting as an example. I think the 4 of us and most people listening to this podcast who know anything about sprinting can universally agree that Usain Bolt is widely considered the greatest of all time when it comes to sprinting. So he's got the fastest of all time in the 100 meters at 9.58. He also ran a 19.19 in the 200s. He won the double, which is winning the 100 and the 200 in 3 consecutive Olympics, Beijing in 08, London in 2012 and Rio in 2016. He also won the world championships in 9, 11, 13, and 15. But let's just assume for 1 second, just for fun, for the sake of conversation, that my man Ryan goes out on a track and beats that time. That Ryan breaks off a 9.5, you know, 7 or 9.56. Yeah, better yet, let's say that Ryan actually raced Bolt head to head and beat him. Would we consider Ryan the GOAT? Of course not.
I would.
Right? That's a one-off performance. And now I'm going to get into a sport that Ryan's very fond of, boxing. That's another sport that people love to debate. Okay? And I know in a lot of circles, Muhammad Ali is largely regarded as the greatest of all time. But he doesn't necessarily, and Ryan would back me up on this, have all of the stats. He finished with a 56-5 record. There are other boxers, Floyd Mayweather, Rocky Marciano, Joe Louis, Marvin Hagler, to name a few, that all finished with better records than Muhammad Ali. But the weight of his impact, the number of title defenses that he had, the amount of time that he took off in his career or was forced to take off and then came back, defended his title and won and so forth. Ryan's talked about this on many podcasts, you know, helps lend credence to the fact and to the argument that he's truly one of the greatest, if not the GOAT. So I believe this next part that I'm going to get to, and then I'll shut up and let you guys chime in. I think this is really what Eric is going to appreciate, because what I've tried to create here, particularly with the classic lifters, and that's what this podcast is about, and there's a lot less numbers and data to crunch because we're really just looking at 11 years of history, starting with the IPF World Cup in 2012 versus a 50-year history dating back to about 1973 for Equipped, right? So we've only got a possible 40 women that we're looking at out of 80 possible, because there have been 40 IPF world championships or world champions in female in classic, and there have been 52 out of a possible 88. The reason that there's a slight disparity is because, as we know, the IPF changed the weight classes for women, and they had the 69s and the 72s, and now they don't have that. It goes from 69 to 76 and so on. So we're not naming a GOAT in this podcast for every single weight class, because that's a completely different discussion, right? It is incumbent upon us to find a way to differentiate between the weight classes. So some people like formulate like DOTS and IPFs and points and so on. And as it stands, as Ryan knows, and I've said many times on this podcast, I can't stand the formulas. I don't like those. So what I tried to do is I tried to create a score, kind of like in the Madden game on PlayStation that a lot of people are familiar with. Football players get a player rating. So I came up with a formula considering 8 different variables that I thought were important, and I'm going to share those with you in just a moment. And then I assigned a value or a weight, if you will, to each one of those, right? And so if you used my formula or my value system, perhaps you might assign a different weight to a category, and therefore you might arrive at a different answer. And this is what makes sports talk so fun, is that what I value may not be exactly what Rory or Eric values and so on. But all this is to say is that I'm really aware of how bias can play into these subjective analyses. And I wanted to install a failsafe for myself to serve as basically a system of like checks and balances to hold me accountable for my selections, so that I wasn't going strictly off of feelings and therefore ultimately playing favorites. So I'm going to pull up for just a second here. These are the 8 categories that I came up with. I came up with titles, which means world championships. I don't know that we can anoint somebody GOAT status if they haven't won a world championship. At least that's my opinion. Consistency and longevity is really important. Have they been able to have this period of sustained excellence? Really kind of dear to my heart is the number, their percentage of successful lifts. And some people might say, well, that's not that important. But it shows me that you're actually good at what you do, that you can actually make a significant amount of lifts. If we have somebody who's the strongest, but routinely goes 3 or 4 for 9, yeah, they're strong and they have these outlying strength, but are they really that good at what they do? It's kind of like a batting average, so to speak. World records are in consideration, their strength relative to their body weight, the quality of their opposition, and then the final two things are impact and reputation, which are a little bit, you know, kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? A little bit harder to you know, put something in concrete, tangible
quantify
terms. Yeah, to quite exactly. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah, thank you, Eric. It's really hard to quantify, but you know, what is the impact that that person had on the sport? Did they give back to the sport? Did they serve as a referee? Have they worked within federations? Or are they just merely this social media influencer who's out there, which look, for better or for worse, brings people into the sport? So I came up with these eight things and actually came up with player ratings to kind of confirm what I had in my head after looking at, you know, what's out there in determining who truly is the greatest of all time. So again, just one final thing. We're not determining who's the greatest of all time in a single weight, in each weight class. Because if we did that, we'd have to come up with 16, right? Eight women and eight men in the IPF, if those are the weight classes that we're looking at. But this discussion is who is the single greatest powerlifter of all time. And so I think I'm going to kind of kick it back to you guys, but hopefully that kind of sets the table, lights the fire, if you will, whatever analogy, lays a foundation for this discussion. And I welcome your feedback. And then, as Ryan said, we can kind of get into some of our picks.
Okay. You put quite a lot of work into creating a formula there for a man who doesn't like formulae, Matt.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, the irony, right?
Well, here's a couple things off my head. Eric, did you want to say something? Look like you're about to say something.
Yeah, I will say that I'm going to hold my thoughts on how we define GOAT until I get to my picks, because I think it'll be good just to, as an intro, to be like, oh, you know what? Here's why you might understand why I picked the way I did, because I think Matt did a very good job. I think we will come to the realization that, which is a very true thing in quantitative science, to where if you establish the terminology and the criteria for something, then you can basically have any opinion you want, and anyone else who agrees to your criteria, this is the way debates work, right? You in any debate where people are which is 99% of actual debates in the real world, they're arguing based on two different criteria, so they both get to be right, which is why the term changing the goalposts is considered a faux pas and essentially a logical fallacy, and it's an out. So I made it very intentional. I set two criteria that I nailed it down to just two, which I'll get into, that I used, and I had to hold myself to it, and it made me change my picks. Yeah. So I was trying to be, I was trying to be objective. So but I'll hold off until we get to it.
I'll just say one thing. Because we've seen such a rapid growth in the sport, particularly in the classic side, there's something that is going to become apparent. It is apparent now, and it's going to be more and more relevant in the future, where we will have individuals who racked up world title after world title after world title in the early days of IPF going classic. But when you actually look at the actual totals being put up in the weight classes, they were not exceptional athletes. We're seeing athletes several weight classes lower do much, much heavier, because the sample size is so much greater now. We could actually find outliers. We thought they were tip of the spear outliers, athletes, etc., but we just didn't know. And now that the sample size globally has expanded so much, and we're now recruiting these top talents, and I think it's going to continue only more and more, that's why Hall of Fames have pioneer wings, where it's like, look, with all due respect, you had a lot of titles. It was a different era. The talent pool was much more shallow, and you racked up a lot of wins. But we have quantified numbers attached in our sport, and we could see, listen, you benefited by finding the sport early, coming across in this time. If you had come 5 years later, I don't know if you would have won a single thing. And that does, but it's great. You won. But talent for talent in your body, you would not have been able to pull off a win in 5 years later, 7 years later, et cetera. That's a fact, though. And that's for all of powerlifting. And some weight classes in particular were particularly shallow, because if our talent pool overall was shallow, and then certain weight classes that were anomaly are even more shallow just by nature, now we're just now getting certain weight classes competitive where previously is super shallow. So that matters. So you're the big fish in a small pond. You rack up a shitload of titles and world records. Great. But were you an exceptional talent, or did you find a niche sport before everyone else did? You know, before it went global, to the extent it is. And that's a relevant discussion in why we have pioneer wings in all different sports, because they realize those things. And that's relevant as well. So not all world titles are the same. And so this goes back to when Matt said initially, longevity plus intensity. Plus, you know, that's in there with greatness, and it's true. And it's true. So it's tough, fellas. But I don't know if we're there yet.
I was just going to say, to your point, Ryan, that's why I think more recent world championships could be, and this could be added to my player rating, should really be weighted more heavily than ones, you know, that happened, to your point, a decade ago. Now, having said that, also to put one in the plus column for the lifters who were competing a decade ago, they may have not have been privy or had access to some of the information that is now available in the sports sciences or training science, nutritional science, or even equipment. Apparel makes a big difference in performance as well. So, I mean, I think we all know that the knee sleeves of yesteryear are not the knee sleeves that we're seeing today.
Yeah.
I think that'll become most apparent when we talk about equipped lifting. That makes it very difficult to compare numbers. And this is something that is a challenge in all sports. So, for example, Jesse Owens, there has been some sports scientists who have thought, hey, if he was not running on a dirt track and if he actually had cleats, he probably would have been a high nine, which is mind-blowing when you think about it, to do that in 1936. So, but that is, like, we can't actually know. You know, we can make the best guess. So I think that's a really important part of the conversation as well.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why this is difficult. All right, let's get into it then. We've I don't know what we established with this conversation with the intro. We established it's going to be interesting. That's what we established. Yeah. This is going to be an interesting conversation. Let's kick it off. The classic men's GOAT, and I'll go first. And I'm going to go with Ray Williams. And the reason why I'm picking Ray Williams, the super heavyweight champion, won it 5 times. Numbers still hold up. And as a matter of fact, his squat still hasn't been broken. Not only was he winning at the national level, winning at a world level, he was in tough showdowns like with Blaine Sumner, but also then pulled ahead and he had both. He had showdowns. He could scrap it out in a tight showdown. Of course, he had the Garys. Okay, that's a massive plus when it comes to showdowns and your handler becomes a part of it. But also had dominance that he pulled ahead and pulled ahead of the others like Jezawepa, Kelly Branton, and the other exceptional super heavyweights of his era. But he also had the element of greatness like an Ali. If we're doing it like a Time magazine style, where if you're man of the year, woman of the year, whichever they're picking that year, it's your impact. And were people talking about you? How relevant were you as well? And in terms of that, even, so he had world titles straight up. Hey, you want to talk about formulas? How about, like, he had Wilks as well as kilos. And those were the formulas we were using at the time. So he had both of those as well as titles at the IPF level. He had quality of opposition in Blaine Sumner, Brenton, Wepa. And then on top of that, his impact when he squatted 1,000 pounds and it was mainstream media and he had the sport on his back. You know, Ray Williams for a while there had the sport on his back, and I came to work a normal day job and everybody at my work came to me because they knew I was a powerlifter and was like, how about that guy, Ray Williams? What was going on there? Tell me about Ray. Hey, did you see that video? And everyone was showing me the videos and all the rest of it. And they're talking about it on just mainstream media. So for me, at all the criteria for myself is Mr. Ray Williams, as well as, you know, there's, I think having a team around you and selecting the proper team matters. And when he went into battle, he had the best generals in the Garys, which was pivotal at times. So there we are. And I believe who we got second here.
It's going to be Rory.
Sir.
I think Ray Williams is a great choice, and he isn't who I've chosen, but he was definitely one of the sort of top handful that I was debating between. I won't say anything about the rest of the handful because I assume that other people are going to mention them as well. But my greatest classic male lifter, I'm going to say Anatoly Novopismeni. He has a few fewer world championships than probably my other picks, but he was also limited from getting to the world championships a few times for things that were totally beyond his control. So I'm sort of, I guess I'm a little bit flexible on that. So he's been competing since 2014, which in terms of classic powerlifting is, you know, reasonably long given classic powerlifting has really only been a thing since 2012. In that time, he's broken 25 world records, I think 31 European records, still holds six of them. And that was across three weight classes, 83s, 93s, and 105 kilos. Won the junior world championships at 19 years old, immediately moved into the opens and sort of just like never looked back, even though he had years left as a junior left at that point. Won the opens in 2019, still young enough to be a junior, won again in 2021, won again in 2023, and his best overall twice. Once in the opens, once in the juniors. So Anatoly Novopismeni, my choice for greatest overall male classic.
I think we did win twice because he won this year in 2021 as well, I think, right?
Yeah, he has three.
Best lifter at Worlds?
Oh, three?
He won in 2019.
Yeah, 2019.
He won in 21, and then he won this past
Taylor
year.
Taylor won 2019, didn't he?
Oh, you're talking about best lifter, or are you talking about just
best lifter at Worlds?
Best lifter.
My bad.
Yeah, yeah. So he's won two. The only thing I would say.
Four world championships, two overalls, I think.
Right. The only thing I would say about Anatoly, it's a little contentious about quality opposition when Ashton never made it to Worlds to battle him.
Yep,
I agree with you. He can be in the discussion, though. And there probably can be caveats to every single one of our picks, including mine with Ray, people could say.
I mean, Emil Norling is like not weak opposition. And in fact, Emil has beaten him a couple of times. Never at a world championships, only at a European championships, I think.
Right.
But I don't think anyone looks at Emil Norling as like, yeah, that guy's a pushover, right? Like there's no depth of talent in Emil's that class. Phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. Who's,
Matt is next.
Yeah, that's what's so fun about this discussion, right? Because I'll be totally honest with you, and all due respect to Anatoly, I mean, I didn't even have him on my radar in terms of in this kind of discussion, but it's you make a strong case for him, and you've got some data and some history to back it up. And so, yeah, I mean, I respect your opinion, and that's what this is about. So, I guess I'll start where kind of Ryan kind of finished. I had, I use this, like I said, kind of player or lifter rating, if you will, to kind of check myself. And I essentially, when I crunched all the numbers and I was looking at the world championships from 2012 to current, we've got Ray Williams and Christoph Wierzbicki both coming in with five world championships. And so they were tied. And I did, like I said, my lifter rating on them, and actually arrived at almost an identical score, if you will, in terms of, you know, in terms of titles, they're the same. Consistency and longevity is just about the same. Percentage of successful lifts, you had Christoph just a little bit higher. World records, they both held typically two world records at a time. You know, with Wierzbicki, he was holding deadlift in total at the time. Ray was holding squat in total at the time, and so forth. He even had the deadlift there for a minute. Strength relative to body weight, you've got to tip your cap to Wierzbicki there. That tips him forward a little bit. Quality of opposition, you know, arguably, I mean, Ray had some high quality opposition, like you said, Ryan, and Blaine and Jezza and Kelly Branton and so forth. But Wierzbicki had some quality opposition as well, with Bryce Lewis and Garrett Blevins and going up against some of those guys. Anyway, I had both of those guys essentially at a tie, but the person who for me very, very clearly tipped the scales, and this may not be a popular pick, is Sergey Fedosyenko. I mean, I don't think that we can argue with eight classic world championships. And so, you know, he checks just about every single box. Now, I know that a lot of people are going to slam their foot down and say, but wait, there's a doping failure and this and that. And I don't know personally if in my opinion, you know, I don't know if I have the answer, if that in my mind's eye precludes you from being in this conversation. You know, I don't know what he failed for, but that was back in 2005. Okay. And would it change your mind if you're one of those people out there who does have a problem with a doping failure? Would it change your mind if we found out that it was for a stimulant, you know, or something like that, like the Jesse Norris situation at the Scranton Raw Nationals?
Yeah, it would impact my decision.
Right. It would impact your decision. So we don't know what he failed for. I looked it up and I couldn't find it, but he failed in 2005, which is a really, really long time ago. Now, is he still doping? I have no idea. And we really have no way of saying, was he doping at the time that he won these world titles? But he won in 2012 at the Raw World Cup. I was actually coaching against him because I had the American Mike Coons in that weight class. And then he rattled off from 2014 to 2021 undefeated. And when you pull up his open powerlifting and you look at the far left column, it is nothing but ones. The man, according to that list, has never once placed anything other than first place. Okay. And Ryan, you often talk about being ahead of your time and out totaling the class above you. Well, he did that. In 2012, he would have won the 66s and he would have come in second in the 74s. And back then, to your point, that was the first year, right, of classic powerlifting being contested, so maybe smaller talent pool. But in 2014 and 15, he would have won the 66s. In 2016, he would have placed second at 66 by only a half a kilo. So presumably he could have gone for the win there, right, and won on body weight. And in 2017, he would have placed second. And 2018, he would have placed third at 66. So this is a man who is out-totaling the vast majority of people in the weight class ahead of him. If you've watched Sergey lift, he's like a Terminator. His execution is exquisite. This guy makes, I mean, he routinely goes 8 for 9, 9 for 9. I mean, it's almost like you're shocked when the guy misses. Strength relative to body weight, of course, you know, he's got probably the highest ratio in terms of that. He just literally and figuratively, for me, checks all the boxes. And I don't know, you know, when you've got eight world championships here, I don't know how you can argue with that. You're gonna come back and probably slap me upside my head when we get into another discussion about the equip stuff. But when I might go against the grain, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag too soon, but I just don't know how we can go against eight world championships here. And his total is by far the biggest total at 59 kilos that we've ever seen. Nobody is, I think, the next closest total, because he's totaled 670.5. I think the next best total is like 40 kilos less. And he's totaled over 640 or 650 almost every single time he's competed. He still has the bench world record in that weight class and still has the total world record after all these years. And if not for some times when he just didn't come to the world championships, I think we could say that he would have won every single one. And so that's why Sergey Fedosyenko is my pick, you know, with, like I said, you know, making a strong argument for Wierzbicki, Ray Williams, kind of a coin toss there. You know, maybe, like you said, Ryan, the impact that Ray has had on the sport, I'd probably place him in second place because of that, you know. And then you've got an honorable mention. Certainly, you know, we could consider Taylor in that conversation as well, with three world championships.
I'm just
saying that's kind of honorable mention. But when you look at the, you know, the world championships won, Sergey has, you know, aside from Wierzbicki and Ray, he's got more than twice as many as anybody else. So that's one of the main reasons why he's my pick.
Well, I can give you the argument as to why I don't think eight world championships does it, even though you think it should. Because he's not my pick. Answer. All right. So you spent a lot of time focusing on the definition of greatest. Where I got hung up was the oat portion of this. And as a bodybuilder, I love me some oats. of all time, unfortunately, yeah, includes currently. And to me, the way I checked myself, the thing that made me reverse some of my decisions, was not just the definition of greatest, which I think there's a lot of debate around, but I had to verify each one of my goats. Do I think there's a plausible argument where they could be the best right now too? Because of all time includes now. And that actually eliminated a lot of the process I went through earlier than that. The other thing that I don't think we've fully, actually, Ryan, you touched on this a bit, is in the conversation of greatest, not all weight classes are equal. And that's because they haven't been as well populated. And even though we've seen this huge uptick in the number of people in the sport, just because of the nature of human genetic diversity, the people who physically can be good super heavyweight powerlifters or 59 kilo and lighter powerlifters. And this actually eliminated one of my equipped picks. There's actually a Japanese lifter who won something like 25 world titles on the equipped side. And I'm not going to get into their names. I don't want to spoil any things. But when you look at what the weight class was back then and who could even physically be in it and the underdeveloped nature of it, and you look at their total relative to other things, even considering how equipment changes, it's not quite the same. And my opinion of Sergey Fedosenko is that it's challenging to really know whether he is truly the same level of outlier that someone in a middleweight category might be. And when someone can be in the middleweights of any dispersion just by pure statistics, they are objectively, when they're an outlier there, it's being a bigger outlier than you are in the 59 or 120 class. And this can actually be measured in terms of like standard deviations from the mean, right? So I actually have not calculated standard deviations. That would have put me on the same level of, because that would have required a lot of data collection, as effort as Matt, but I just didn't put that much effort into it. But let's just say I'm not sure that Sergey actually is as much of an outlier as someone else. And that's the same reason why I actually shifted away from Ray Williams, who was my first pick. Even though he's got 5 world championships, even though he still maintains the squat world record. The thing that why I could not choose, so that's why I couldn't choose Sergey Fedosenko, is because of the weight class he's in. With Ray Williams, he has the 5 world titles. He still has a squat world record. You could make an argument that he could still be competitive right now, although I think that argument's starting to fade a little bit more than some other people. The challenge I had was that the amount, first off, let's be honest, Jesus Olivares has 3 world championships. You know, yeah, it's the recency bias, but he is as far above of Ray Williams in terms of his total and his best performance versus his best total as Ray was above Jessa Wepa. So it's hard for me to go with Ray Williams because of that fact alone, because of that oat portion of the goats. So my choice is actually Taylor Atwood. He doesn't have necessarily the most titles. He doesn't necessarily have the most staying power. But I think as a middleweight, he had a point in his career where he had the greatest performance and the greatest span for a good little chunk of time. That is only a little chunk of time when you think about it relative to the length of powerlifting, but not the length of classic powerlifting. And you know what? I have no reason to believe at this stage, even though we haven't seen it, that Taylor Atwood could not come back to a low to mid 800 total. There's definitely been comebacks like that and even greater. So it is a very, very contentious class. And, you know, like, Austin's totaled more than him. Sure. You know, yes, he got third at the most recent world championships. But the point is he is still absolutely still in the conversation. And I don't think anyone can objectively argue against that. And I think it's an easier argument to make that Taylor could still be the greatest right now than it is for Ray. So that is why I didn't go eventually with Ray, who was my first pick. And then when I started to look at titles, I was like, Sergey, I was like, yeah, but that's 59th. And like, we've only now finally seen in Wasker someone who's kind of on potentially even the same level. So it's almost that Sergey, I needed to see a period where the 59s gets more developed, and maybe I reverse it and I go with Sergey in 3 years. So that, for those reasons, my pick is Taylor Atwood, because he has had the most I would say what is arguably the greatest period of time. He ticks all the boxes enough, and the oat portion is that he could be considered, and there's a real argument that he could be the best of all time right now if he just happened to recover a bit from some of his injuries and put together some good blocks of training. So he's still in the conversation, which I think is actually something that is required if we're going to use the actual definition of GOAT.
Yeah, I would say, here's what I would say. What your concerns were with the adding the oats to this meal is 100% what I was touching up on when I was talking about earlier, how we have like the Pioneers wing. And ironically enough, coming into this, I was going to say Taylor Atwood and did the opposite. And it's like, I can't do it all. I'm going to go with Ray. He's got more titles. And he was like, I went with Impact. I started doing, I leaned a little more heavy on the Time Magazine Person of the Year aspect of
the social
what he
impact.
Did. Right. What he meant. And that's very much what the Muhammad Ali thing as well. People forget about Joe Louis, who had 25 successful defenses of the heavyweight title in around the World War II era, because Muhammad Ali's impact culturally, you can't touch. And Ray did that for us as well as everything else I said. But when I was thinking about it, it's the reason why I didn't take Fedo as well, is he's the, like, all these world titles and longevity. The only problem is, how many men do you know are that size? Walking, right. Period. How many men do you know that size in the gym lifting weights and stay that size and then blah, blah, blah. But then you could say the same thing about Ray when they come back at me. If they wanted to come back at me, they'd be like, how many guys, you know, Ray's size. But so I was kicking it back and forth in my head, the same thing. And then I was like, maybe I got to pick somebody who was in the middle, around in the middle, who was dominant, but no one had quite the dominance and reign. But Taylor shined so far ahead of all of his rivals. Like Perkins now is still way too close to Rondell or way too close to Atwood prime. Nobody was in contention. It was period. Perkins now, there are people like, look, he did phenomenal. He didn't win athlete of the year because Jesus Olivares took it with Sheffield, or Rondell took it with his performance, let alone, but Taylor in his prime, nobody said anything. It was Taylor's era. When it was Taylor's era, it was Taylor's era. And that was it. So I was going to come in here full well ready to say Taylor. And then I backed out because the old school in me was like, I don't know. I started leaning into the Matt Gary mode of thinking, where I was like, the titles and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I started thinking about Impact and whatever. And I was like, I'm going to go with Ray. And if this conversation came up, I'd lead on the Impact part. I knew that. I would lead on that part. Where Taylor had great impact, but he wasn't, you know, not quite like Ray, where he literally went mainstream with us. But
four different picks. How cool is that?
I didn't expect that.
I didn't either.
And you could talk it in. I love that you were thinking that way, though, Eric, because I had a hard time with that one. Yeah, and
the 120 plus for me to choose a 120 or a 59, they really had to, like, for example, I think Jesus Olivares could maybe be in this conversation, depending on how things go. Like, if we revisit the GOAT conversation now that the sport is a little more developed, you know, like that could happen, you know, it, like if Jesus ends up continuing to improve from here, I'm like, my God, you know, that now he's like, he's more ahead of Ray than Ray was of Jesu Huepa, you know, like that is, now we're starting to go like, oh shit, like he's got seven world titles or something like that. Like, how can you not, you know?
Right.
He was another guy I was actually humming on about picking. Because he's the greatest power lifter. He has the biggest total, regardless of tested or untested.
Yeah.
Three world titles.
Yep.
It's like, how do we go against that? It's period. It's kilos. He's the greatest of all time in terms of in three world titles and everything he's doing. I had a hard time, man. This is such a
difficult one. The only reason I didn't
one.
Is just because it's too early. Like I think Austin or... Yes, yeah, so I guess anyone listening to this, like, if they're like, how could you not pick Austin or Jesus? Honestly, we might all end up picking those if you did this podcast in 2027, you know, because that part of Matt's definition, which I totally agree with, is the sustained aspect. That's part of greatest. So, yeah.
And yeah, say, think, go ahead, Matt.
No, please. Go for it, man. Go for it.
I have to say, Eric's made some really good points and has now got me reconsidering one of my equip picks. I initially excluded like Jesus because like very early in his career, I considered Sergei and ended up excluding him because of the doping violation. And I sort of struggled to reconcile that with like the some of the social elements of being the greatest. But Eric's point about depth of weight classes and like outlying weight classes have less depth has now got me looking at my equipped picks and thinking I might try to hurriedly revise those.
It's not only the depth of the weight class due to the body weights, but also the time period. Yes. If you came in a time where it's the exact same thing, everything you said about the weight class,
that's a great transition to the women. You know, like I've pointed this out before and I want to say it again just because I think it is so mind blowing. I think we're seeing pretty good development on the men's side of powerlifting and the way that as a sport on the classic side, because there are still some records that are as old as 2016 in the men's side of powerlifting. So that kind of boom that we saw in the teens was the start of the plateau that I think we're still kind of in. Obviously, any plateau is still going to have outliers and those are going to slowly rise it up. And those are our world champions and people in this conversation. But again, when you look at women's classic, there is no world record that has not happened in the last 2 years. It's mind boggling. We're not near the peak. The stuff that Sonita is doing right now and what we're going to see in the 84 pluses is like, I've just stopped putting limitations on any kind of like, anytime I think, oh, I wonder if they'll be here. I'm like, no, shut up. You don't know what's going to happen because this is wild. So I think that totally applies to the women's divisions, which we're going to get into now, which I think makes it quite challenging.
I'm going to say my pick, but it's got all those caveats where we're starting to get to a point where if someone had someone far more recent, I would be okay with that. With saying that, perfect segue. Rory, you want to kick us off with the female GOAT?
Yeah, sure. So my female classic GOAT is Kimberly Walford. So she's been lifting since 2002, where she started as a 67-kilo junior. So she's definitely ticking off the longevity box. I've counted that she competed 55 times in that time, and she's won all but 8 of those meets. Like, just first, hands down, all but 8 of those meets. And about half of those have just been like the most recent ones, right? So she won the World Classic Powerlifting Cup 2012. So I'm going to count that as a world championship, even though it wasn't like technically a world championship. She won again in 2013. She won in a different weight class in 2014, 15, and 16. And 17. She missed the world championships in 2018. Didn't show up. Won again in 2019, where she was technically M1, competed in the Opens, still won. And then since the change of the women's weight classes, since COVID, so 2021, 2022, 2023, she's been competing at 69. So she's now competed across, 67, 63, 72, 69. So that's 4 weight classes over the course of her career. And even then, she's still finishing sort of in the top handful, even though she's now, you know, been lifting longer than some of these lifters have been alive. So I'm counting that as 7 world championships. One of those was the World Powerlifting Cup across 2 different weight classes, 10 national titles, if you include both USAPL and USVI, including Junior Open and M1, and in 3 weight classes as well. And she's broken 39 world records across her career, which is just like, there's a few other people that we've mentioned who have broken sort of 50, 60 or more, but you know, 39 world records is just astounding. And she still holds 4 of those. And I guess the ones that she holds in the 72 kilo class, she's just going to hold forever now, like, because we're not like that weight class is gone. That's just her weight class forever. So yeah, she had a reign that was both long and high. And I think like, she's not still winning today, but she's certainly still in the top handful of lifters in the class that she's competing in today.
So I'm next up. I got the same. I got Kimberly Walford. And really for me, I'll tell you what. So everything we had said, or I had said, kicking this off about pioneers, early days, when you look at some of the totals she was posting up winning world championships, it's not at all close to what would be now. And her at her best, she's not winning a world title now. But So if we're doing that, we're putting the oats in it, it's not going to hold up like that. So she definitely benefit, especially with the women's side. And Eric already said, like, now I had a podcast. It hasn't dropped yet. By the time people hear this, they'll be here listening to it with Natalie Richards. And I told Natalie, I'm about to do a podcast tomorrow. I told her to the cast of people I had booked, you gentlemen. She's like, that's going to be a good podcast and discussion. I'm like, oh yeah. And I said, the reason why I'm having a hard time with my picks is because I'm convinced the greatest of all time is actually competing right now. They're going to be the most exceptional outliers of all time right now. But I'm going to pick somebody who's far more decorated because they got there first, just because they were born earlier in life. And it is what it is, because if Leah Babel was around or whatever, I don't know. But or to match points, what if Leah Babel didn't know everything we know now in terms of sports science, in terms of programming, would she still, maybe? I don't know. But anyways, I'll go with Kimberly. And what really helps me is Kimberly's 2019, when she came back, a bunch of political BS happened and whatever, don't want to get into all that, but switch federations, missed a year competing and blah, blah, blah. And when she came back in 2019, it was for that time a murderer's row. And she, to Eric's point, was in the middle, you know, not at the small end, not at the top end, but there was Jessica Bittner, Isabella von Weisenberg, Anna Rosa Castellane was around. Like, they had like so many of these lifters were around in her era in the 72 kilo range. It was such a deep division. They could split it in two to 76 and 69 and still have world championships. That's how deep the 72s were. And when she came back in 2019, she faced a murderer's row and won as a master lifter. And that helped ease me that she's not just any pioneer, because a lot of pioneer world champions fell off and we never heard of them ever again. And Kimberly is not amongst those. She bridged into the next era. And even if she's not winning, she's relevant anyways. She's still relevant and can finish top five-ish, et cetera, depending on who shows. That's huge for her age and everything. So I was comfortable with picking Kimberly, but in 5 years, I will move her to the pioneer wing and we will have a new greatest of all time. And if someone else here had a different greatest of all time, I'll be totally fine with that for everything we said. Eric, what are you saying, buddy?
Yeah. This is another one where I had to reverse myself. So I also had Kimberly Walford to start, and then the oat thing caused an issue. It was a little harder for me not to stick with Kimberly, though, because she's now current. Like, is she the best now? Is not the right question, because she is a master's lifter. But then I was like, you know, if you look at the stats, like, master's lifters are often still improving, not always. I don't think Kimberly is one of them who is. I think she hit her peak in her 30s, just kind of looking at her numbers. But I really struggle with it, because if you were to rank powerlifters by the 69 or the 76 kilo class right now, or even try to do it in the 72s, she's not at the top anymore. And I don't think she could be. There's people 20 kilos ahead of her, lighter body weight, you know, just as an example, like Carol Degara, just most recently, you know, she put up 554 or something like that at a 66.1 body weight, you know, just kind of like, whoa. So it's tough with the trajectory of the women, which is why I kind of had that. I feel bad even saying not anyone except Kimberly Walford, because when this came up, like, all right, well, the women's classic is easy done, you know, like when we first had this conversation. And then I was starting to give myself some objective criteria, and I was like, god damn it, like, I'm gonna have to say something that'll be unpopular. I don't think it's gonna be that unpopular, though, because I think this one does make sense. Amanda Lawrence is my pick. And it's because there's just no one who is contending with her. And now we are in this peak era. And she ticks a lot of other boxes, right? So the way I see Amanda Lawrence is that she has won 4 world titles. You know, that's a sustained period of time where she's killing it. She's crushing it, right? She's not in the 84 pluses. She's not in the lower weight classes. You could argue that the 84s might be one of the least developed out of the current weight classes right now, but there's no reason that it should be or shouldn't be any more or less developed than, say, the 76s, which is totally new. You know, it's a combination of classes, you know, or 69s and all that. And in this era where we're seeing this huge boom, and considering the oat portion of the goat, she doesn't have any threats. There's nobody in the 84 pluses who's strong enough to then come down to get her. And there's no one in the 76s. And I'm saying that as someone who coached Jess Bittner through three world championships, and she's a friend of mine, who I think can move up and knock her off. So, and I also don't even know if we've seen her peak, you know? So it's, even if she just stays where she at and keeps competing, the resume is only going to be stopped by an injury as far as I can tell. And there's very few women we can say that about right now, because it seems like someone's coming out of the woodwork every second. So my pick's Amanda Lawrence, just because of the tumultuousness of the women's weight class. And she seems to me like the only anchor right now. You know, some of the people who we thought who were going to be like, oh, shoot, like no one's even going to get near that, we've been like, oh my God, like, okay, Carola Garra is now threatening Leah Babwa, you know, or, out of nowhere, you know, there's people coming up in the 52s, 57, like it's wild, you know, people dropping down. Evie Corrigan doing things that are wild, you know, breaking world records on 8 attempts. But even in those extreme cases, they have to be on their P's and Q's. They got to dot their I's and cross their T's if they want to be the best right now. They probably got to dot their J's too, you know. It's like this is, you know, it is extremely tumultuous. But you know who probably could just coast in and crush it and has been? Amanda Lawrence. So that's my pick.
Let me add to that. Four world titles, two-time best lifter at the world championships, and is either 2020, 2021 probably, because 2020 is a COVID year, that she had the biggest total in powerlifting despite not being in the biggest weight class. 100%. You could take for everything I just said, for all the reasons said earlier, where Kimberly, I was humming and hawing, are we past that now? We're right on the cusp of being past that. And it's no disrespect, but that's what happens when you're a pioneer. You get the benefit of coming first. And it's not that people are forgetting about you. It's that they're actually looking at, this is the way it is with all sports. The rest of the world wasn't playing your sport yet. And now that they are, did you benefit from them not playing your sport when you're winning all those titles? Now, I mean, yeah, Amanda Lawrence, she's been in major showdowns, like with against Daniela Melo in 2019 and won the world title in a major showdown, had a competitive rideable. 4 year stretch and two-time best lifter at the world championships. And one time was the number one period, despite not being in the biggest weight class. I'm comfortable with Amanda Lawrence. If that was, she was on my short list as well. And a hard time, man. Mm-hmm. Hard time. Matt, can you split the difference? Did we sway you either which way, or are you going to say Turbo Kev, Leah Babwa?
I just want to add a couple of things. I think everything that Eric just so wisely said is accurate and factual, and I can't disagree with any of it. I think Amanda has, in some ways, is the victim of her own success. I mean, she's such an outlier and doesn't have a lot of competition. You know, save Daniela Mello, you know, who burst onto the scene in 2018, and then they had their head-to-head in 19, and then Amanda's just continued there. You know, I keep asking myself that question. Do we say, because she doesn't currently really have any competition, do we put that in the plus column for her? Like, is she really that good? Or is that a strike against her? Hmm. You know what I mean? That there's, right, that it's like, well, you're beating, you know, just a class that's just not very populated with a lot of other good lifters. And so I think, I don't know where I fall on that. I mean, like I said before with Fedosyenko, and that's why I tried to explain that Sergey could have won the 66s a lot of those years. He could have won the weight class up, you know, but Eric makes a strong point. He's just in this weird weight class where there's not a lot of 59 kilo men. And with Amanda, Amanda checks a lot of the boxes. I mean, I didn't pick her, but she's, you know, she's got four in that weight class. You know, a lot of people forget Ilya Strick, who came before her, obviously, from Netherlands, who won five. But, you know, back to Ryan's point, you know, she gets credit for being a pioneer in that weight class. She was first. She was there first. And she kind of paved the way. We have Ana Rosa Castellane winning that weight class once in 2016, where she actually just went up and so forth. But I, again, used my formula, and I was looking at a lot of people, and I just want to kind of mention some other two that I didn't pick. You know, I had Joy Namani in the discussion here for a second in my thought process, because Joy has been doing this for a while. She has four world titles in two different weight classes at 52 and at 57 kilos. She has one bronze finish as well. You know, she held the world record at one time, of course, in the deadlift, which has, you know, been passed now by Zsa Jakob. But you know, and does these lifts beltless, you know, up until just a time ago, and now she's started to put a belt on. And I mean, look, if I don't want to put the cart before the horse, I mean, if, and it's a huge if, and I'm not saying this is going to happen, but you know, she's moved up to 63. I mean, if Joy were to snare another title at 63 in the future, wow, she'd be the first person to essentially do that in three different weight classes, you know, first female. That'd be an extraordinary accomplishment. So, you know, I kind of was looking at Joy, and of course I also was considering Bonica. Bonica's got seven world titles, but again, you know, we come back to Eric's point, you know, lifting as an 84 plus, and you kind of look at the roster, it's like, who's she beaten? I mean, she did beat Brittany Schlader once, but that was kind of Brittany Schlader before Brittany became, you know, the Brittany that we'd all know today in recent times. And so, but Bonica has been exceptional, making a lot of attempts. You know, she checks a lot of those boxes, extraordinary strength, and so on and so forth. I did have Amanda on kind of my honorable mention, if you will. But one of the reasons that I did create this rating is so that I didn't let my subjective emotions and feelings and bias come into this. I wanted to hold myself accountable. And as I said at the start of this podcast, I've had and I consider it a blessing to have coached all of these tremendous athletes and lifters. And I've had a lot of experiences, and even some of the experiences that have been slightly more negative, I still count those as a blessing, because it's like, man, it's just wonderful to rub elbows with these great athletes. And that's why it's like, it's just game recognized game. And so I've got Kimberly Walford as my female GOAT for a lot of the same reasons that Rory and Ryan picked. And I understand, you know, that now, you know, she's not winning, but she's got eight titles. She's got seven open titles and one Masters world title. She also has a bronze, you know, as well, and just an extraordinary lifter. And you want to talk about the depth of competition, like Ryan alluded to. You know, I coached Kimberly in 2012 at the Raw World Cup. She went against Jennifer Thompson. Okay. And we beat Jen on the last deadlift by using a chip and winning on body weight. Again, when we went to Russia in 2013, I coached Kimberly. Who did she go up against? She went up against Anna Filmanova, right? That's no slouch. And then you've got, like you said, Ryan, she went up against Isabella von Weissenberg, Anna Rosa Castellane, and of course, you know, more recently, Jess Bittner. And, you know, Jess wasn't at that time at the strength that Jess is now, but nonetheless, it's still a W. You know what I mean? It still counts. And so that shouldn't count against Kimberly. And so, you know, for some of the things that Kimberly lacked, namely some things that I would have, you know, preferred that might've been a little bit better, that are near and dear to my heart, are squat depth. You know, she's been known to kind of struggle with squat depth and attempt selection. But aside from that, you know, what I think trumps that is just her grit. You know, sometimes Kim had to win ugly, and her ferocity and intensity and what she brought to the table time in and time out. And she just kept showing up, kept coming back and winning title after title after title. And so I just want to give her that respect and give her that credit. And it's no secret that, you know, Kim and I no longer exchange Christmas cards. But that's not a reason why I wouldn't pick her. I respect Kimberly. She's been a pioneer in this sport. She's a legend in the game. And again, we're talking about, to Eric's point, the greatest of all time. But in this context of this conversation, we are talking from 2012 to 2000, essentially 23, okay? Because we haven't begun this year, gotten into this. So we're talking about the greatest of 11 years. So let's remember that and kind of frame that in our minds accordingly, you know? And for anybody that's listening to this that says, well, why aren't you talking about the untested feds and why aren't you considering those? And for me, it comes down to the consistency and the reliability of their standards. And so forth. And I'm not going to beat that like a dead horse. But when you have, you know, 24-hour weigh-ins and irregularities in judging and squat bar and deadlift bar, you have too many moving pieces and too many moving parts. So that's why I've framed this conversation in this way, that I think we're talking about the last 11 years. That is the greatest of this time. And to Eric's point and Rory and Ryan, 3 years from now, if we were to revisit this and have another podcast, yeah, I think, you know, our picks are changing, you know, and like Ryan said, the greatest female powerlifter is walking amongst us right now, you know, or is to come, or maybe she hasn't even been revealed and she's about to pop off five or six in a row. Who knows? But anyway, for all those reasons that I mentioned, I'm picking Kimberly Walford.
Yeah, I'll double down on what you said with the untested. Not everything we already said about lack of depth of talent pool for whether you're on the extreme ends for weight classes or whether you are really early on in powerlifting. Both of those apply to untested at all times. The untested talent pool is much more shallow. And then add to that, they don't have singular events like the IPF Worlds where everyone shows up, so you have to battle it out. Instead, you show up at a meet that's held at the local gym or a high school and break a quote-unquote, air quotes, world record with officials that are just from your state. And then, very rarely you have the head-to-head matchups, et cetera, to let's see if you guys can play the game. You see a lot of weird stuff. It just isn't. And then the standards is very difficult to lay down. It's tough. It's very tough. If we were going to add them, John Hack is an individual that in this era, he obviously is the guy. If we're going to add into this conversation, it would be John Hack. And to John Hack's, if you like, I love that he won an IPF world title in a major showdown or in the dead middle of the weight classes where the talent pool's deep. And it was Brett Gibbs he had to beat, and he did it as a junior. And again, I don't got to tell you, Matt, because you were there with him handling, but yeah, it'd be with Joey Flex. It would be John Hack. It would be in that conversation as well. I don't think I would pull out Ray and throw in John. It'd be difficult, but I don't know. Frick, he'd be the only guy. You might be able to talk me into it. I don't know, because John's still here. He's still doing his damn thing. Maybe it is. I don't know. You know what? I don't know. This is a very, 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 very tough discussion. But with that being said, do you guys got anything else you want to throw out, or do you want to play a little game of Jeopardy and a little bit of trivia? Oh, Nelly, you guys ready?
Let's do it.
Settle down. You're too excited, guys. Settle down. Let me share my screen. It's this screen share here. There it is. All right. Okay, do you see that?
Ah, nice. Yes.
Okay, do you see the other six? You only see the one Excel spreadsheet, right?
Yeah,
because I have all the answers.
Yep.
Okay, perfect.
That's so great.
Because I'm like, I don't want you guys obviously to see the answers. So I was like, if I mess up the screen share and I put hours into doing this, and you're like, well, we just saw all the answers. That's the whole thing's over. That's good. That was my Friday night. But anyways. All right, fellas, we're going to play a little game of Jeopardy for those listening only and not watching on Spotify or YouTube. Here are the categories. Old school. Second category, 2012 to now, classic. The third category, titles, and more titles. Fourth category, world records. And the fifth category, events that shape us. Whoa, missing an E in there. You know what? Let's put shaped us. There we go. And of course, like in Jeopardy, if you pick old school for 100, that is a relatively easier question. But if you were to go higher up and pick old school for 3, 4, or 500, well, you're going to get 500 points, but it gets more and more tougher, these questions. I'm telling you this right now. So we'll do this for everyone listening. Our hosts are just going to raise their hand, and I'm going to try to decide who rose their hand in what order. And we'll decide like that who gets to go. Who gets to go first, though? How does this usually work with Jeopardy? Anybody watch Jeopardy?
I don't know how they pick the start off.
Yeah.
That's a you tough know what? One.
Since we don't have a return,
why don't we go by seniority?
I was about to say we're going to give it to Matt Gary. I think we all knew we were giving it to Matt Gary. So, Matt, which one would you like?
Let's start with I'll take 2012 to now classic for 100, Ryan.
All right. Question. Brett Gibbs is a legend for being a two-time world champion in the Open. How many times did he come in silver? Yep. Matt.
He came twice. No, actually. Yeah. That's wrong. I just figured it out in my head. So somebody else needs to go.
Eric.
What is three times, Alex?
What is three times with the steal? All right. Hang on a second here. What we'll do, should we just give each other colors?
Yeah, make me green. I'll keep it easy. That way we can add the points. Smart.
Wink. All right. Now who gets to go next? How does this work? Is it you, Eric?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Eric gets to go.
I'll take titties, and more titties for 100.
Oh, God, Eric, come on, man. It's a lovely show.
I'm sorry. Oh,
man. Sean Connery.
I had to do it.
Celebrity Jeopardy. That's great.
Celebrity Jeopardy. No, in all seriousness, I'm sorry. I will take titles, and more titles for 100, and I apologize for any children who have now been ruined by me.
Who are now going to do drugs because of this. For 100, how many world titles has Amanda Lawrence won? Sir. Eric.
Four.
Yeah, that was as soon as you seen it, I was like, okay, well, Eric's going to start racking these up, isn't he? All right. Eric, you get to go again?
All right, let's do something hard. Let's go old school for 500.
Ooh.
Old school for 500. Big money, big money. The first IPF super heavyweight champion was Don Reinout. Is that how I pronounce his last name, Matt?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's close enough. Don Reinout. Yes.
What years did he win?
Years. Oof. Oh, he won a lot.
That's a tough one. Don't Googling, Rory. I see Rory's looking off screen here. All right. I'll give you guys the answer. He won in 73, 74, 75, and 76.
Right.
Four-time world champion and recently passed away. Rest his soul. And I'm going to yoink.
Mark that one red, yeah.
All right. So should we start with Rory now, or are we just going to go in that kind of rotation?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Rory. Yeah.
Rory, what would you like, sir?
Let's go events that shaped us for 100.
Events that shaped us for 100, as I...
Mostly because I'm curious what kind of questions you're going to ask in this category.
Yeah. Okay. So what was the first year six-pack Lapidac commentated at the IPF World Championships? Yeah. Matt.
2016, Texas.
That's right, Matt. And I'm going to... What color would you like, Matt?
Well, let's make something that sticks out. I guess, I don't know, purple, maybe.
There we go. Yeah, it's the color of royalty. Makes sense. All right, Matt, which one do you want, sir?
I'll take events that shaped us for 200.
Events that shaped us for 200. What nation hosted the 2012 World Cup? Yes, Matt.
Sweden.
That's right.
It was in Stockholm.
Yeah. What's the next one, Matt?
I'll go ahead and take, let's go world records for 100.
World records for 100. What is the current 74 kilo IPF world record total? Matt?
800 kilos. Chell Backlund just hit it at Euros.
You are right, sir. Matt, go again, sir.
Let's go back to old school for 100.
Old school for 100. How many world titles did Bill Kazmaier win? Eric.
Oof.
Five.
Two.
Way off.
Okay.
So
How
now
many World's
there is.
Strongest Man titles did he win? That might be what
That,
I'm
well,
thinking.
that's that, that's I think you're probably adding those in. I think that's what it was.
I know he won three in a row, didn't he, Eric? In the World's Strongest Man.
I'm tempted to look it up, but I just want to keep my
But
phone away from me for this. I'll be cheating.
yeah,
All
I
right.
think he did three in a row, but maybe five total. So
We'll toss it to Rory then. Rory, what would you like?
let's go 2012 to now for 200.
What nation has two 83 kilo world champions? Matt?
USA. Mean, we've got actually more than two. We've got John Hack, we've got Delaney Wallace, and we've got Russell Orhi. So we've got three.
Anybody else? That's the problem. USA's got three, not two. Kazakhstan has two now.
Oh, shit.
So I should
Yeah.
actually, so I get negative 200,
Is that
right?
how it works?
Yeah, I think, yeah, because I answered incorrectly. So I guess, but
Oh, I have a
Matt,
negative 100. Yeah, make the 100 my color and negative two
yeah,
on the
right. So
old school.
the exactly
All
that
right.
purple,
Hang
yeah.
on a second.
I'm glad Matt got his hand up first there
Just
because I was
make
going to
it
say the United
purple.
States as well.
Just make it purple, dude.
Yeah, it wasn't for me for some freaking reason. I don't know,
Okay,
man.
that's fine.
Work with me. All right, we'll
You're
keep
doing
moving.
great. It's all good.
Thanks, Eric. Okay, Eric, you want to go next, sir?
Let's go events that shaped us for 300.
Events that shaped us. All right. What year was the IPF founded? Matt.
Oof.
1972.
That's correct. One sec here. And what would you like, Matt?
We'll just keep on going down the column. Let's go events that shaped us for 400.
Right.
I want to make that whole column purple.
What was the year men and women competed at the same event and location for Worlds?
Like for the
For
first
the
time?
first time. For the first time. What year was it when they brought those two world champions, Matt?
So on the equip side, it's 2006 in Norway, Stavanger,
That's right.
Norway. Yep.
Correct. Wow.
Because it was
400.
separate before that.
That's right. For
Yep.
the longest time, men and women had two different world championships way back to like 1980. I think the first it was only men, and then it
Yep.
became men and women.
Yep.
All right, Matt, go ahead, sir.
We'll finish it off. Let's go events that shaped us for 500.
Events that shaped us. Powerlifting is in the World Games. What year was the first World Games that had powerlifting as an event? Rory.
2001.
No, sir.
Oh, shit.
Man.
Are we counting para?
No, just the World Games. Like, no, not para.
I'm gonna
You
lay
guys
off on that
ready?
one. Yeah, it's
1981.
Wow,
Man.
really?
Okay,
Yeah, I would have
80.
guessed in the 80s, but I wouldn't have got that right.
Yeah, so that was nobody got that one. Or oh,
Rory,
Rory is a minus. Yep.
that's good. That's gonna hurt you, love.
Oof.
Rory,
Oh,
what was your
throwback. Rory's
color?
on the board now, though. That's
Throwback. I don't
good.
know. I don't have a color. I haven't got a color yet. Eric,
God damn.
he's on the board. Let's
He
go
you're on the
with
board, but it ain't pretty. We're gonna give you
Oh
blue.
man, that's
You got a
hilarious.
hole to dig out of, my friend.
Ouch. Jeez.
Who wants to go next here? How does this work in terms of you know what? Let's let Eric go. Yeah.
Okay. Let's go with old school for 200.
Old school 200. Here. All right. What USAPL men's super heavyweight champion is also a two-time Olympian? Yes, Eric.
No, oh, and I forgot his name, and I know exactly what you're talking about.
I'm going to steal in just a second, I think.
2 seconds.
Oh, wait a second.
USAPL national champion.
Oh, he dive bombs his squats, and I can't remember his name right now. It's going to drive me bonkers.
Five.
Should I start playing the music?
Four. Three.
Shane Hammett.
Two. One.
Shane
Now,
Hammett.
Shane wasn't a USAPL champion.
That's right.
Matt, do you know who this might be?
I'm going to lay off because I don't want the negative.
Shall I give a clue, gentlemen?
Was he also a wrestler?
A professional wrestler.
Yes, that was my other choice. And
Matt,
I wasn't sure.
It's Mark Henry.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was Mark Henry or Shane Hammond. And then I forgot who Shane Hammond was. And then I only could think of trying to figure out who he was.
Shane never competed in USAPL. He competed in the USPF, which was the IPF affiliate prior to USA Powerlifting taking over in 1998, 97, 98-ish.
I knew that was going to trip some people up. I knew they were both Olympians and both national champions at the U.S. level, but I knew only one of them was USAPL. I'm like, this is gonna grab some people.
It got me.
All right.
You got me, Ryan. And that's also a minus 200 for me. We got to put that somewhere.
Wait, did Matt? I don't think Matt got those points.
Let's see. Oh, so do we not give the – we do give to Matt, right?
He didn't get it.
He didn't get it.
He elected
not to guess
something. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, so give Eric the minus.
Okay. Yeah. I'm also negative.
Yeah, I'm there with you.
All right. Damn it. Okay. But we can let Matt go. Matt, which category would you like, sir?
I'm having trouble seeing. Oh, let's do the second category. It's obscured by the I can't see it.
Sorry.
What is it? Something classic, 2012 classic for 300.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do that one.
For 300 in. Okay. Wait a second here. Ray Williams had a 5-year streak in which he won world titles. Who are the two champions that won the world title before and after that streak? That bookended his 5-year streak, sandwiched this 5-year streak, however you want to word it. There's a champion before and a champion after Matt.
So before was Brad Gillingham in 2013 in Russia, and just after Ray was Jezza Weppa. In 2019, Sweden. That was the year that Ray bombed.
Correct, sir.
That's right.
Pick your next one, Matt.
Let's go titles, and more titles for 200.
You're welcome.
God damn it, Eric.
He's making me want to say it.
If Matt said it, that's a soundbite. That would have been a soundbite right there, flipped and videoed. How many world titles has Krzysztof Brzebecki won? Matt.
Five.
Correct. Sorry, was that 200 or 300?
That was a two.
That was two. Okay, Matt.
Slaughtering us, Rory.
What's
That's
next,
what,
sir?
Sorry, Eric.
I said he is slaughtering us.
There's a lot of purple up there. Let's go world records for 200, Eric. Or Ryan. Sorry.
World records. Oh, I don't take offense. World records for 200. Who holds the longest standing total record? Eric.
Sergey Fedosenko. Oh, that's this right. Is men and women, isn't it? Yeah, that's still
it's,
right.
It's Sergey Fedosenko.
I think yeah, that's right.
What color? You're
he's red.
I am green. I have been red.
Sorry.
Make me feel bad.
But oh, wait, you're green, Eric.
Green.
My fault, Eric.
Sorry.
You're it's all red. Good. And that brings me to a positive number, baby.
Okay, what do you, what would you like?
Runs on the board.
Yeah.
What would you like there, Eric?
Let's go world records for 300.
Yep.
Who holds the bench press world record in the three lift in the 83 kilo class? Rory.
Owen Hubbard?
That's right. You posed that like you were asking me a question. You didn't seem very God
I was
bless.
Confident, and then I put my hand up, and then suddenly I wasn't confident.
Stay firm, man. No one knows your bluff. No one knows it's a strong bluff. All right, what would you like next, sir?
Let's go world records for 400.
It's 400 of the current 8 total world records for the Women's Open. How many are from 2023? This is in the classic. Eric.
Seven.
Eric, yeah. That's right. And what would you like next, Eric?
Let's shift over and go 2012 to now classic for 400.
Sergey Fedoshenko had a 7-year streak in which he won world titles. Who are the two champions that won the title before and after his streak? St. Matt.
Darius Wazola, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, from Poland in 2013. And then after would be Antoine Garcia from France.
Correct.
In 2022.
Well done.
That is correct, sir.
Yeah.
What would you like next, sir?
Let me see. Let's just finish off from 2000 now to classic for 500, please.
Who was the first 84-plus classic world champion? Yes, Matt.
It's, I believe I'm pronouncing Sonia or Sonia Manea. She's a New Zealander, I believe.
It. Like, I thought for sure Noah was kidding.
Oh, Matt's man.
Matt is a freaking wizard.
Rory,
this.
We just got done dirty, dude.
We two should people have from
the NZPF did not get it.
She won two in a row before Bonica started her streak of seven.
So she it's won crazy because
she won the first I would like, two.
I would ask the names of who bookended Sergey's 7-year streak, and Matt's giving me dates. He's giving me locations. I'm like, all right, man. All right, Matt, what's next, my friend? What's next, my friend?
Let's go old school for 300.
Nothing like the old school. What weight classes did Captain Kirk Karwoski win IPF world titles in? Yes, Matt.
125 kilo weight class. And you say weight classes, and he won one at 110.
That's right.
Yep.
Correct. What's next, Matt?
Let's finish off old school for 400, please.
Old school for 400. What year did Ed Cohen win his first open world title?
First open world title.
Yes, Matt.
1984.
That's right.
Oh, I was actually thinking that.
At 82.5 kilos.
All right. Now, well, I mean, this is turning into a bit of a sea of purple, fellas. Get ready. Matt, what's
is
next?
Is anyone surprised? Yeah. Is anyone surprised?
Let's finish off world records for 500, please.
World records. Who holds the 69 kilo bench press world record in the open class? Three lift. Yes, Matt.
Jennifer Thompson. Still.
That's right.
So at 144, which we shall see what happens at Sheffield, but high probability that that number gets broken by
best
either.
On the draw. Yeah, I feel like there's a delay because I'm from New Zealand. I would have raised my hand on that. I'm just saying.
I think Matt's purple's got you guys downtrodden. So you're like raising your hands a little less aggressively. Like, yeah.
So it's the delay.
What's next, Matt?
Let's go for titles and more titles for 300. Can't bring myself
titles,
to do it.
Titles,
Eric.
More titles for 300. All right. Who won the most titles in the 74 kilo open class? Who won the most titles in the 74? Yes, Matt.
It's the Belarusian Alexander, and I forget how you pronounce his last name, but it's Hankovich Sunik. It's hyphenated. He won from 2013 through 2016. So,
Rory, did you know that?
I was going to give an eclipse lifter. I was going to give Yaroslav Olek, who's done like
well, this is
egg or not.
This was in the classic, though. Yeah, this is in the classic.
I don't think you specified. I was actually going to get the wrong answer.
Yeah, so I was going to say that as well.
I should specify. I'll specify next time. You know, I have it written in the question classic. I thought I said classic.
Okay.
I
mean, sorry.
You Matt, might have. It's possible I didn't hear it.
Matt, what's next, sir?
So we'll just go down to 400 because we're going to finish out the board. Titles.
All right. We're going to keep it moving down.
Yep.
Finland has one world champion in the men's classic open. Who is it? Finland has one world champion in the classic open. Who is he? In the men's side.
Oh, it's
Matt.
Alexander Eriksson. Yes.
He's Swedish.
No, that's Swedish.
Oh, damn it. That's right. So I missed one.
Anyone want to steal?
Darn it.
I don't know who it is.
That's right.
I don't know who it is.
Antti Savolainen. And this will cost.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he won the 66s in 2015. Damn it. that was in Finland, actually. That was a home game for him. That's one of the
only Matt can defeat himself if he keeps missing.
I don't even think he can.
I don't even think he gets
this wrong.
We'll see. Titles and more titles. 500 here, fellas.
That's it.
Who was the first French Open Classic champion in the men's? Or period. The first French lifter in the classic to win an open title. Matt.
It's going to be, I believe you pronounce it Sofiane Belkacir at 105
right.
kilos. Yep.
That's
he
right.
won wow. it. He won it in Finland in 2015.
Exactly. Well, there you go, fellas.
I would have not
do we have to add this up, or are we just going to crown Matt? I mean, it's.
We can just say who's first, second, and third. I think that's probably.
Well, there it is. That's also pretty. Wait a second.
Rory has a negative number. I have a positive number.
Oh,
Matt
yeah.
Won.
That's all we know. Oh, yeah. Okay. Rory's negative 200. Gotcha. Yeah. All right. Well, that was kind of fun, huh? We all had a pretty good idea Matt was going to. He was good the favorite, stuff. But you like these were tough. I think if it was they just were. Period overall strength, like strength sports period, that's where Eric's going to start leaning into his history. But because it's IPF specific and Matt literally was like competing, coaching, the whole nine was there. He was around for Captain Kurt Kowalski and Ed Cohen. Like he was there around those guys. So it's like
my
more
lack
remembering
of equipped knowledge hurts me. It really does.
What's that? Sorry.
My lack of equipped knowledge hurts me. I think that's the issue. Yeah.
Same on this one. But anyways, fellas, listen, I'm telling you, you guys are the A team. All right. You guys are my A team. As we close out the first show in this series, I just want to tell you, like, I'm so happy that you guys came on this because the way you guys articulate your points and in terms of like debating from your side, if I got to go into a powerlifting debate, and I got to pick a team. I'm picking this panel. And we're crushing. All right? Wow. And that's that. I'm glad I have you, fellas. Everybody listening, as per usual, please do subscribe. And make sure you listen to the next podcast where we talk about equipped goats, but not just that. We're going to talk a little bit about the history of powerlifting, how we got to here, and some prominent figures from our past that brought us to the current. And God knows what kind of debates and discussions we're going to get in because we're all opinionated people who love to diverse and expand on ideas. So if whatever platform you're listening on, please do subscribe. Give us high ratings as per usual. I am Six Pack Lapidat. Six up. And we are out.